Blog Talk Radio.
On tonight's Paranormal Radio.
Thank you for joining. This is Onyx Knights Paranormal Radio. I am your host, Brian Sons, also known as Onyx. I want to go ahead and give a shout out to our sponsor, Creature Replica. For those that don't know, Creature Replica is an upcoming line of cryptid and creature action figures. It's due out in 2015. Go check them out on Facebook. Just type in Creature Replica. It's all one word. Go ahead and check them out on Facebook. Give them a like to stay updated with what's in the works. If not, then you can go to my own group page and join up. It's Onyx Knights Paranormal on Facebook also. Got a great show lined up for you guys tonight. I've got Kathy Strain. Kathy is she's written a book called Giants, Cannibals, and Monsters. And it relates to the Native American aspects of Sasquatch. Kathy is currently the Forest Heritage Resource and Tribal Relations Program Manager for the, I hope I say this right, Stanislaus National Forest. She's been a professional archaeologist, anthropologist for 20 years or so. And she's also been conducting research and field work on Sasquatch for nearly as long. We're going to go ahead and bring Kathy on. A lot of good things that we're going to discuss tonight. We're going to discuss Native Americans and how they have portrayed Sasquatch as compared to how we now know Sasquatch to be. We're going to discuss how Kathy got involved in Sasquatch research, where it actually started, where it's rooted, as well as her job that she has. She's basically, if I'm understanding correctly, the forestry archaeologist where she resides. And I'm really anxious to get this started. Also, at the second half of the hour, we're going to be taking a couple of Sasquatch reports. I got a couple of people supposed to call in. Hopefully they do. If you yourself are listening and you've had a Sasquatch encounter of any type, or you know, any paranormal encounter, whether it be ghosts, any type of paranormal encounter that you'd like to share, you'll be able to call in an hour. I'll go ahead and open those phone lines. In an hour, you'll be able to call in and share it with us. And I really do want you guys to, because I'm so interested in hearing what, you know, what you guys have to say. The number is going to be 323-580-5703. That's 323-580-5703. And I also want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. I won't be on the air next week because, in fact, it is Christmas. And I probably won't be on the air the following week either because I believe that's going to be New Year's Eve or something to that effect. But during this time period, I'm going to be kind of reformatting everything. And I'm thinking about also doing a video type of show. Bill Brock, he and I talked, and he thinks it's a good idea, and he's really pushing for me to do that. I think it'd be a good idea. It'll take us to the next level with all this. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and get the ball rolling. We're going to bring Kathy on. Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem.
I hope you're having a good night tonight.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful evening. A little cold, but very pleasant.
I've been kind of doing shopping all day. That's always a blast. What I'd like to do first, Kathy, is get a little bit of what it is, what your title actually is at this point in time.
What my title?
Yes, with the forestry.
Yeah. Well, I actually work for the U.S. Forest Service, so forestry usually refers to the state. Then that's just how we tell each other apart, you know, because if you say, you know, they have their forest management, we have our forest management, so that's how we tell each other apart. But I work for SOMA. Yeah, pretty much. We're all about as bright, too. I work for the Stanislaus National Forest, which is the U.S. Forest Service in California. I'm in basically Northern California, and I am the head archaeologist for the forest, and I do all the tribal relations work for the forest as well. And so I'm pretty much in charge of anything that has anything to do with history, prehistory, Native American concerns, anything like that.
Oh, wow. That's got to be an awesome job. I mean, that sounds like a dream job to me.
Well, it is a lot of fun. I have a staff of 5. And so, but in the summers, we go up to massive amounts. I had 21 extra on top of that 5 this summer. So I had, like, basically 21 plus 5 is 26 employees that were doing archaeology out there. And so, yeah, it was a great summer. We found some great stuff. So
now you're also very interested in Sasquatch. You've written your book. Mm-hmm. And you also go out in the field as far as Sasquatch goes, separate from your day job, basically, right?
Correct. Yeah, I don't Bigfoot on government time. That's the taxpayers pay me to do a job, and I do my job. But I Bigfoot. My husband and I are both Bigfooters, and we spend an enormous amount of time in the field. Looking for evidence, looking for a different sign or anything we can find that might help provide evidence that Bigfoot is real.
Now, here's my thing. During your day job, though, have you perhaps uncovered something that would lead you to the Bigfoot side of things?
Most of the time when I'm in the field, I haven't seen stuff. I saw a footprint once when I was doing my daily job. I had gone out to a site to look at it, and as I was going towards the site, there was this powdery road that was just as powdery as powder could be, and there was a beautiful footprint right in the middle of it. And I didn't have my camera, even though later my husband said, well, you know, there's a camera on your phone. And I was like, oh, well. I kind of learned my lesson after that, but it's one of the few things that I have seen while I was out working that was Bigfoot related, because my eye is different. You know, you can't, for me anyway, it's hard for me to do two different things at the same time. And so when I'm looking for archaeology, I'm looking for archaeology. When I'm looking for Sasquatch, I'm looking for Sasquatch. And so sometimes, you know, I can mix the two, but generally it's easier to do one thing at a time, and I'm better at that. So, but I have,
right,
during my job.
I guess that's where my question was, do the two ever cross over each other, or have they ever?
Oh, well, they do in the sense of when I go to tribal meetings, Bigfoot almost always comes up in the tribal meeting for somebody wanting to tell me some story they heard or something new that's happened on the reservation or something to that effect. And, you know, I go ahead and listen to it, you know, and write down whatever they're telling me because, you know, I'm there at the time. And then and if other employees, like the people who have the most contact with the public is our recreation staff, because they drive around and find people who are camping and make sure they have the right permits, know what the rules are about open fire, that kind of thing. So they come in contact with the general public a lot, and those
right.
people will tell, the public will tell our recreation people all kinds of stuff, and then they'll relay it to me and say, okay, I was in this spot, and this is what this person told me. And so, you know, I'm always getting new leads all the time on what's going on out
wow.
there.
Oh, I mean, you're in an excellent position to, you know, for people to come to you and tell you, hey, look, I heard this or I saw this
mm-hmm.
in such and such an area. You're in that
yeah.
you're in that position where that information would kind of come to you.
Yeah, and it makes it a lot easier for most people because I am I hold a high position in the Forest Service. I mean, I'm you know quite high in the field, you know, of what I do, and so it helps people, I think, be more open to telling you something because they're really not afraid of me, like mocking them or anything like that. You know, they feel very confident that they can tell me the story and I'm going to listen and give my thoughts. You know, sometimes I have to be honest and go, well, this really doesn't sound like a Bigfoot encounter. This sounds more like this, you know, or something.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
You know, and so they're more open. You know, I have never had anybody that I have worked with or talked to where I suggested, well, maybe, you know, maybe you should consider that this is what really happened. I've never had anybody go, well, you don't know what you're talking about and stomp off. I just try to give people that 99.999% of the time what just occurred to you was probably just a common animal doing something you didn't know was common. And so, you know, take a step back and really look at what occurred and see if there's another explanation for it, because that's the
right.
scientific way. Yeah, I do everything by science, so.
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, I always want to try to debunk things first and let Sasquatch be the very last possible choice.
Correct, and that's what you should be doing because, you know, animals, and, you know, not everybody can be an expert, wildlife biologist should be, but the rest of us, we don't spend all our days doing, you know, other biology, you know, experiments or everything. So it's difficult to know what every single animal in the forest might sound or do or whatever, but most of the time, you know, if you do diligence, you can figure it out or, you know, at least make some reasonable hypothesis of what maybe it is that happened to you.
Right, right. And there's nothing beats actually being out there, you know, in the woods experiencing it and getting that experience so that you, nothing beats that. I mean, you can listen to animal sounds online all day long, but it's much different when you're out there hearing it live.
Oh, yeah, that's when it comes down to it, that's really what the coolness of my job is that I'm paid to go outside. I'm paid to walk around the forest and you know, enjoy myself. And I've taken plenty of advantage of that myself when I found a beautiful view or a beautiful creek and just taking it in and enjoying that I'm outside and not sitting at a desk tied to my chair, which I do my fair share of that too, but, you know. But I enjoy when I'm allowed outside.
Well, we're going to get to the heart of everything. First, what I'd like to do is find out how it all started for you. What originally got you interested in Sasquatch? And then we're going to get to the book and the Native American side of everything.
Sure. When I was a little girl, I watched the movie Legend of Boggy Creek. And I believed it to be a real documentary. You know, how it's filmed is very much in a documentary style. And so I believed very much that that's what it was. And so, and I was just very intrigued by this thing being out in the woods that was just, you know, nobody could do anything about, that type of thing. And by all rights, I should have been more scared than I was, but and looking back at it now was one of, in fact, it was the first movie I ever purchased once I was old enough to buy something. You know, I was very proud of that. But it was such an influence on me that I decided that that's what I was going to do for a living, that I was going to be a Bigfoot hunter and or, you know, study Bigfoot in whatever way I could. And so then later on, and I don't, maybe fifth, sixth grade, something like that, I asked my teacher, what would it take for me to be a Bigfooter? And she said, well, I guess you'd have to go into anthropology. And I said, oh, okay, well, that's perfect, you know. And so it was always kind of my thing that I was going to be an anthropologist. I think I wrote something 1 year in sixth or seventh grade when we were, you know how you used to do your own tombstone for Halloween of, you know, that's so not politically correct now, I guess. But I did one where I said, you know, here lies, you know, Kathy, the greatest person in Bigfoot history or something to that effect. And it was just going to always be who I was. But I learned pretty quickly that nobody got paid to do that. But by that time, I was already really into learning about early man and what anthropology was about. And so it didn't matter to me that I wasn't going to be able to be do this professionally. And so that's kind of what I did. And I still remember, I don't know if the word's closeted, but I'd bring it up and I'd talk about it. And people back in those old days, you know, before the internet, there wasn't a whole lot of people that knew what Bigfoot was. They sort of maybe had seen the film, the Patterson-Gimlin film from it was on some show. Now I can't remember the name of it.
Leonard
Nimoy, whatever that was now. I can't remember the name of it. Shoot. But, you know, people had, people had seen it from that aspect, but they didn't really have a lot of knowledge about it. And so you talk about it, but they really wouldn't have an answer about it. You know, they really didn't have much to say. And I was fortunate then after I graduated with my bachelor's, and as I was getting my master's degree in anthropology, I had worked that summer for the California Hot Springs Ranger District of the Sequoia National Forest, which is very near where I was raised and born and raised, I guess. I have to be born to be raised. And they enjoyed my work very much, and so they asked me, I was very fortunate to be a student employee of theirs. And so once I graduated, I was guaranteed a permanent position. And so that district, then later on, we budget issues caused us to have to merge with a couple of with one other district. It would be the Tule River District. And those two districts of federal land surrounds the Tule River Indian Reservation, which is where some very famous pictographs are located. And so working with that tribe, I also learned a great deal about Bigfoot. And that's where I kind of put the connection together that I could study Bigfoot and Native Americans, you know, merge my interest in anthropology and archaeology together with Bigfoot into one cohesive unit. I was able to get some important information from them during that time period, and then I finally decided, well, I can't, you know, not talk about this anymore or not be, you know, in this realm when I joined the BFRO, and then there was the 2003 International Bigfoot Conference that was the first time Bob Gimlin had come and talked to the public in, you know, 40 years. And so that was just, you know, just a heavy, one of the most wonderful times of my life, and I look very fondly onto it. But anyway, that's the story of how I got to be where I am today.
Are you still with the B.R. Paul Road today?
Oh, no. No.
Awesome. I won't even go there. What I'm hoping to do tonight is clear up a lot of misconceptions.
Sure.
There's a lot of people that say, oh, Sasquatch are vicious and they're killers because the Native Americans describe them being cannibals and taking the children and women. And then there's also people who say, oh, Sasquatch can cloak because the Native Americans describe them as being a spirit animal. And I'm like, you know, well, they also describe eagles and wolves and things of that nature as being spirit totems and spirit animals. That doesn't mean that they have special cloaking powers. It just means that they're a little bit, they're much more closer to nature than we humans are.
Well, I've never heard of, the term cloaking has never been used in anything that I have ever studied or read, so I don't even know where somebody would get that from. That's not anything that would be in a Native story, because that's modern. There's no such thing as cloaking to Native people. They wouldn't even know what that
word
meant.
Thank you. I'm loving you. I'm loving you more and more and more. Thank you.
Okay. You're more than welcome. I can only suspect who has been saying that, but I will let that go. What I think is in order to understand Bigfoot's stories or what Native Americans say about Bigfoot, you have to understand the culture. And you can't do that in a, you know, I have all these people, it's very annoying that they think they can read a story and in 5 seconds get what Bigfoot or what Native people think about it. Well, you have to study it. It's not something that you can read in Wikipedia and all of a sudden be an expert on it. You know, it's very complicated, it's very nuanced, and there's a lot of little things that you have to understand in order to understand the culture and the stories as a whole. And so that's
why
there's an
entire... You're making more point.
Well, I mean, that's why if it was so stinking easy for somebody just to walk in and go, well, hey, tribe, XYZ, then why do we have people who spend lifetime studying Native Americans and how they do things and all the stuff that goes with it? I mean, I have my job because I have a credential to do so. They can't pick, you know, the forestry guy or the forest guy to do that kind of work because it's very nuanced. It's not an easy thing, even though people would like to think it is. And so you have to understand the context as well. So Native people, those stories represent things that were part of their history hundreds of years ago, maybe even thousands that are passed down. They did not have writing, and so everything that they do is oral tradition. And so oral tradition is meant to pass on extremely important information that your elder needs you to know in order to survive in your environment. So they don't pass on stuff that's stupid. So let me just put it that way. So if you're wondering, how come they don't have stories about brushing their teeth? Well, because that's not something they did or needed to pass on. You know, these are cultural things that they needed a young tribal member to learn. So they also only have the ability to describe something in their terms with what your understanding is. And so if somebody came to me and threw me into a math conference, the best I would be able to do is say, yeah, they were throwing down a bunch of numbers, and it looked cool because I don't get math. I've never gotten math in my entire life, don't care about it, don't know nothing. But somebody else who was more experienced would be able to say, they talked about quantum physics and blah, 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 and all this other interesting stuff. But I can't describe that to you because I don't understand it. And so Native American people, it's not to say that somebody's stupid, it's just outside your world view. It's outside of what you know. So Native people in those stories report things how they viewed them in their world view. And so...
And of course, we now are trying to 20th century all of it.
Completely, without understanding all the rest of it. So it's just kind of like, well, Bigfoot, you know, they have some stories where they'll say, well, the Bigfoot was there and then it wasn't there. Well, that doesn't mean it cloaked. It just means they're just describing to you exactly what happened. Well, I've had that happen to me all the time where I've been in the forest and I saw a deer. I did something, turned around, and where's the deer? Well, the deer didn't cloak.
That's exactly right.
You know, the deer just moved out of either my field of view, or it's turned in a way that it's blending with the forest landscape. I mean, all animals that are in our forest are colored the way they are for a purpose of survival. And so why would that be different from a Bigfoot? You know, they oftentimes they're described with colors that are obviously for blending with your landscape so that you're you know, able to function without any hostility. You have to have that mechanism. And so all they are
you're
doing
quickly,
is supporting those.
You're quickly becoming one of my favorite guests so far.
Oh, well, that's good.
And
as far as
the same thing for so long.
Well, it does get old and then you say it 5,000 times and they go, oh, and then they get back into that same silliness. So there is no animal within Native American culture that does not have a spiritual side to it. All animals do. That's how it works. It doesn't mean that the animals like eagle, condor, lizard are walking around like ghosts. What it means is they have the power if your spirit animal is, you know, say bear. Well, bear has the option, and he's actually then taboo to you. You're not supposed to kill bear or eat bear or anything like that because he's a special animal to you. He can send dreams to you, or protect you, or have other connections with you, because you're considered, or the animal's considered a protector of you. So every animal has that.
We have to remember that all of this is coming before we reach our level of science and understanding that we have now.
Oh yeah. And a lot of Native people still very much believe in that nature within itself is a protector of Native people in general. I mean, Native people are very connected, not all of them, of course. I mean, I can't speak to every single Native American person out there, of course, but they still are very connected to their religious beliefs that nature as a whole is perfect within its creation, and it's designed to protect Native people when they are in the correct alignment with nature. And so, and as far as cannibalism goes, I don't for one second believe that a Bigfoot is going to eat me or carry me off. And, you know, if he even tried, I'd give him a hernia, so he'd be really sorry anyway. So, but those stories
are... Not
for
the hernia part, but...
Well, it'd be his fault. But, you know, those stories have a different design. You know, they are designed to keep children. I mean, to some degree, I mean, I would have picked to my sense of...
Like the boogeyman.
Yeah, like they can be the boogeyman. I don't believe that Bigfoot ever hauled anybody off. I think those stories are attributed to him for a particular reason. And I've had lots of suggestions from Native people about, you know, why that is. I don't know why I would pick Bigfoot to be the boogeyman. You know, I would have said, you know, bear is obviously much more frightening than anything else that I would think would be out there. So for a lot of reason, it doesn't make any sense to me why he kind of gets that unfortunate, you know, label. But, you know, it is a strong belief.
Could it be because there's so much less known about them? That is more
mysterious.
Yeah,
I think he's also gets to be the fallout guy. You know, the tribe here locally is the Miwok, and they have such a strong belief that Bigfoot eats people that we have a cave located on this that has roughly, I don't know anymore. I mean, I know it's over 100 individuals. It's a cremation cave that were tossed into this cave down at the bottom with some offerings. And under the Native American Graves and Repatriation Act, we tried to essentially give those remains back to them so that they could be reburied and, you know, treated accordingly. And they refused to take them back. They are adamant that they would never bury their dead in a cave, and that those remains actually represent people that Bigfoot ate. And I don't care what I say or do or anything, that's what they believe. And so it doesn't mean they don't believe that Bigfoot's going to eat anybody today. You know, and sometimes I have a hard time getting out of them, how do you know that? You know, if you so strongly believe that these Native people aren't yours, how do you know that? And I don't really get that answer, but it may be that I'm not ready to hear it, or it's not my time for that lesson. And so
that's
fine.
That's I think that's also some of the reason why you have these people who are 100% Bigfoot are vicious and Bigfoot are like Jason and Friday the 13th. You and I, and you haven't studied all this with the Native Americans, even you don't believe that Bigfoot are vicious and killers and you know, go and attack people all the time and eat people all the time, right?
No. I there would be so many people gone. I mean, I bet they wish they could just to get rid of us because we're such a pain in the butt. But no, I don't believe that. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that has happened. I would even say to go as far as saying there's no evidence in prehistoric times that any of that happened. I think they're just stories. And so what that story means, I don't know. And it may be that you know, a lot of people, when they say they see Bigfoot, that he's kind of humped in the back, you know, from how he's walking or doing. And it may be that the impression that he had a basket, because, of course, they're very familiar with what baskets are, led them to believe then, well, if he has a basket, then, and of course, when I use the word he, it's in recognition that there's more than one. I'm just using it as a statement, you know, right this minute.
All right.
But it may have been that seemingly innocent view that caused him to say, well, there's only one reason he would have a basket, is because this is his intent. So, I mean, but to be fair, I think probably, you know, I believe Bigfoot is real. There's no doubt in my mind that he is. I don't doubt that they had routine interaction with human beings. And there's no doubt that there are tribes today that don't like Bigfoot, just as there are tribes today that think he's peaceful and wonderful and feel like they have always had a relationship with the Bigfoot throughout their tribal history. And so there is no one-for-all answer to all that. But my personal belief is, of course, is that there's nothing to fear out there. I'm more afraid of human beings doing their incredibly stupid things that they do than I am of ever being around a Bigfoot. And so if
that
somebody...
That is 100% correct.
Yeah, there's somebody out there toting that Bigfoot's, you know, evil and all this stuff, I would like to have a little chat with them, because they are causing more issues than they are helping to solve. And if you're not here to help solve an issue, you're not helping.
Yeah. I can put you in touch with several. You know, for me, I hear all the stories, I listen to the stories, I take it and kind of file it away in my little file cabinet in the back of my head. But for me, it's more of what I experienced myself. And it's kind of like I got to prove it to myself. So I go out there. I've had these things around me. If they wanted me, they could have me at any time, because I'm out there by myself.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I talked last night, and you mentioned basically the same situations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I'm in the field, I mean, on purposely, sort of hoping that would happen, in the sense of, you know, getting not be stolen, but get a really good view, because I put myself in a vulnerable space. And I think they're very curious, for sure, about human women. I think we smell differently and we act a little goofy and everything else that goes
with
it.
I'll take your word for that one. That's all you there.
Well, I mean, that's...
I do agree, though, that... you know, I say it all the time. When you go out there, what you bring with you is what you get back. It's kind of like in The Empire Strikes Back, when Luke is going into the cave, you know, and Yoda tells him, you know, only what you take with you. And it's similar in my mind. It's similar. If you go out there aggressively and showing aggression, you're going to get that back.
I think it depends. I think it largely depends on a lot of different factors because, you know, when I go on the field, I always have a gun. I've had multiple people tell me, you're never going to have an experience if you have a gun on you. Well, horse puckies, I have had experiences wearing a gun. The Bigfoot, and I am, to be honest, pro-kill. I am pro, I don't like to use that word kill, I am pro-science. I am pro that this species is at a crucible of being possibly eliminated because we're absolutely killing the habitat out there. And, you know, I prefer much more that DNA or something else would be significant and sufficient. I'm just losing hope that we're ever going to get there because it just seems like every time you turn around, there's just nothing, you know, you can't win it. You know, somebody says, oh, I turned in this hair, and then it comes back as being something else. And so it's just getting more frustrating for me as a scientist to say.
That's when it leads people to think that someone is stepping in.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very disheartening because at some point that those animals are going to be gone because we have killed the environment for them. There's not enough food and water left. It's just the same for us. And so it's just too much almost at times. And so I'm just saying that in my own experiences, I have been, well, you know, if the opportunity arrives and it's my burden on me that maybe I would take that shot or maybe I would, you know, if we found a dead body, go ahead and grab what I could in order to preserve that species. And this is in my mind the entire time that I'm out there. And at any time, if he could read my thoughts or thought I had any true ill will, then I'm sure he could have reacted. But instead, you know, and I do agree that 100% aggressive behavior gets aggressive behavior back. I've seen it where my style is much more of a calm, just walk around camp, don't do anything,
right.
You know, just do my own thing. And I've had other people, you know, come then into camp and be almost the exact opposite and get some extremely strong reactions. And, you know, and it's amazing, you know, how quickly that can go from here to there, you know, based on how people are behaving. And I think it's the same as I wouldn't normally be rude to somebody in a grocery store, but there's only so much, you know, somebody pushing me down or cutting in front of me in line or whatever else might be happening that you can tolerate, before you react.
It's similar to a stray dog. I mean, you're not going to, you know, run up to a stray dog, you know, all aggressively and acting crazy because you're probably going to get bit.
Oh, hey, you amen.
Know, it's like this. If I go out there and I try to be just one with everything around me, just mm-hmm. very calm, just at peace because, you know, despite all the, you know, mind reading, crazy mumbo jumbo that comes along with Sasquatch, their instincts will be able to tell them, you know, based on
your
actions
intent
and your behavior. Yeah, just like a dog.
Yeah, just like a dog. He's an animal. He's a part of the forest, and he can tell by how you behave what your intention is. And does he fully understand every aspect of that intention? No, there's no way for him to do that. But yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. How you react to something is exactly how you're going to be reacted to. And it all has to come down to what it is that you're looking for. I mean, I don't begrudge anybody there's many times where I've gone in the forest and just be calm and just listening to the wind and whatever happens, happens, and be nice if Bigfoot just walked through, you know. And so I know a lot of people, it's more about the experience for them than it is about proving anything. And that's perfectly
right.
Fine. People have to, nobody can force you to do something you don't want to do, and you shouldn't be forced to do something you don't want to do. You just be you and enjoy whatever it is that you get out of it because you're very, very, very lucky, and you're one in like probably millions to get to have those experiences. And, you know, I tell myself, I had a sighting 2 years ago, my first sighting, and I probably screwed it all up because there was a camera that was aimed at the location where the animals ended up, and it's my big hiney that ended up blocking the camera so that you couldn't see because I was too excited and I ran at them, you know. And so do I regret that? Do I regret that I didn't try to take a picture or whatever? No, I don't. I'm grateful unbelievably for the experience. I mean, it was a life changer. My husband and I, there was four of us, when we came home, that's all we talked about for 6 months every night, going, oh, my God, do you know what happened? And we're like, oh, my, you know, just it was so, so amazing. And so would I give that up for proof? No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't change anything of it because it was a wonderful experience that I'll always have that other people may not ever get. And I almost in a lot of ways feel really sorry for them because those naysayers that go, oh, you're just, you know, being hoaxed or it's this or it's that. I feel really sorry that they don't know the truth because once you know the truth, you feel very enlightened to let go of a lot of different individual things. So.
Well, you know, what you described earlier when we were talking about going out there and being calm, I've always said and always been a firm believer of give them something that they're not used to. You know, normally when they encounter a human, the human gets scared, runs off, things like that. If when I'm out there, if I have something go on, whether it be a tree knock, whether it be hit in the back with a pine cone, something of that nature, I don't, and this is my best advice for everyone, don't run, first of all, because you become prey. Even if it's not a Sasquatch, you don't want to run. But I try to show them something that they're not used to where they'll, in my mind, I picture them saying, oh, this is unusual. First of all, it's unusual for a human to be out there alone in the middle of the night. You know, secondly, for you to react without any fear, in my mind, I think that they're going to be like, well, this is someone different. This is something unique. You know, let me get a little bit closer and see what the deal is with this person.
Well, and I think that's very true. I think they are very curious about us hairless monkeys that are running around the forest for whatever reason at nighttime. And I do believe that you can catch their interest by doing that. I mean, we've done all kinds of different things like that to try to, well, look at me, I'm different. And, yeah, don't run. There's no reason to run. That you're not going to be killed, that they're just, if they're coming quick at you, is because they probably, well, you know, and that's kind of unfair because I've had an incident where I was, well, it's a kind of a long story, but I've been in an incident where I wanted to hold my ground, but everybody else was like, ah, you know, because they're more hunters than I'm hunters. So I don't have that fear built into me that where I say, well, this isn't a good situation. I was like, well, what's the worst that can happen, you know, in this? And they're like, well, you don't understand. And I don't, because I don't come at it as a hunter. I come at the situation as a scientist. And so science by nature isn't fearful. So, but I firmly believe that when you try different things or you react in a way that they're not used to, I think it does make them very curious about, okay, well, you didn't do what I expected. And it's not meaning to say either where I have known plenty of people who literally got ran out of an area. The Bigfoot wasn't going to hurt them, but they were going to pester the bejeebers out of you until you left, you know, like throwing the pine cones or
right.
Like, you know, doing whatever. They were, like, trying to be nice about it. Hey, we didn't invite you to dinner. We don't have enough food for you. It's time for you to go now. And you're going, la, 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 you know. And I do believe that happens, you know, where you, where they want you to go. You know, they don't want you in that particular spot for whatever reason it is. And they're giving you subtle hints of, okay, you can move along now. But I don't think if you chose not to leave that you would get much aggression. I mean, we had recently had the Forest Service Patrol.
It goes back to the stray dog theory. You know, if you have a stray dog, whether it's aggressive or whether it's just real timid, you'll get a much different reaction if you just sit down calmly than if you run away or act aggressive towards it. It's so similar.
Oh, well, yeah, and it's going to be similar if you act hostile towards it. Yeah, I mean, a stray dog, I would never approach a stray dog and expect him that he's just going to let me pet him. I mean, that doesn't happen. So, but what I was going to say is that we had a patrol recently come across some campers who told them that they had a Bigfoot experience just recently, just over, I believe in November or October. And it was very clear from what was going on that whatever this thing was wanted them to leave. But they said, well, we can't leave in the middle of the night. All our stuff is here. And then the next, it gave up. I mean, it didn't try to do anything to hurt them. But, you know, it made sure to voice its displeasure. It's like, oh, fine, you know, then I'm going to leave. Take that, you know. So.
Yeah, I had, when I first started going out there, I had I wouldn't even call it aggressive. I would just say kind of, hey, keep moving, you know, that type of interaction, you know. And many times I've seen deer, and I've stopped and looking at deer, and I'll get what I call a log slam, where they pick up a log and they slam it to the ground, or hit in the back with either a rock or acorn or pine cone, something like that, you know, which... It, like I said, that's not aggression to me. That's more of them saying, hey, keep moving.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, now, something to freak you out just slightly.
Yeah. Now, I did have a tree shaking once. I just felt like they were driving me out of the area. This was back when I first started. But now, it's really pretty much laid back. It's almost, and I've been going back to this area for 7 years. So now it's almost like they've gotten used to me. It's like, oh, it's just that guy. You know, we don't have to worry about him. That's the impression that I get. I'm not saying, you know, I can't prove that, of course, but that's just the feeling that I get. There's no more of the trying to put the scare into me is the best way I would describe it. There's no more of that.
Yeah. No, and I do think that in an area where we do a considerable amount of Bigfooting with other folks, it appears to be the same pattern where, you know, at some point you're just not interesting anymore because they know what you're going to do, they know how you're going to react, and, you know, they're okay with it. And so they just, you know, they just ignore you.
And they no longer see you as a threat.
Yeah, you're just a part of the environment. And that's kind of, you know, and what that creates is this weird thing to us is because then you're going like, well, how come you stop throwing rocks at me? I liked it when you threw rocks at me. Can you please keep throwing rocks at me? No, we only do that for the guests. Sorry, you don't count. And it's weird how that feels, because you're there because you want a reaction and an interaction, but it's ceasing because they have become basically used to you being there. And so it's this double-sided sword of what you get out of it. You know,
the
more they're used to
you,
the less they do things.
Right, you become used to them as well. It's like you said, you know, now when I'm out there, if something goes on, there's not that fear. It's kind of like you said. It's like, thanks, that was awesome. You know, can you do that again? It's more of an interaction, for lack of better terminology, than the oh my God, what was that? You know, turning at every little snap in the woods. That just doesn't take place anymore.
I always wondered, though, if they secretly like it when you do that, when you go, you know, oh, my God, what is that? You know, why'd you do that for? I don't know. I always, it's just me thinking, that had to make somebody giggle, you know, just because that was so outrageous what just happened.
Well,
you know, certainly you enjoyed yourself, I hope, when you caused that to happen.
That's why I try to give them the opposite reaction to what they're expecting or what they may be expecting. It's, you know, it's speculation, of course, but to what I believe they might be expecting.
Yeah, and I don't know that we can know that. I mean, that's one of the things about Bigfoot is there truly is no way for us to know so many things, so many questions that we have until such time as the government funds a study that allows us to do more work, because there's all kinds of unanswered questions of, you know, what do they do at night? How do they sleep? You know, what is their groupings? You know, all this. Do they have a playful side? Does that pine cone being thrown at your head, is that really a, hey, dude, I really think you're awesome? You know, we don't know. And so it's
Well,
I know
unfortunately, a dead body is not going to give us that information.
No, but
either.
it will get the funding. And that's part of the issue is that nobody can get the funding until science accepts that Bigfoot's real. That's the only way that's ever going to happen, is all of a sudden the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who controls wild and endangered species, will come to life and go, okay, here we go, here's the proof we need, let's fund this and get this steady. And no other Bigfoot's going to have to lose its life, because they'll be able to put protection measures, you know, on that to make it illegal. But it's, the fact is the matter, we have to have funding in order to make those long, because it's going to take years and years and years and years and years worth of study to answer those kinds of questions. I mean, Jane Goodall's been doing this for so long, and even then we still come up with new stuff that people never knew that chimps could do. And so years and years and years and years.
Well, there's many of us that think that the government already knows, and that due to, you know, there's theories out there because of the logging industry, and it's just all the money is what it boils down to. What it trickles down to is money. All the money that's coming in. If the government were to come out and say, yeah, they're real, then they would have to allocate certain lands. Is there anything you could say one way or the other on that? You doing, you know, your profession.
Yeah, I have never been told ever. I mean, I've been in the Forest Service for, I always forget. I know I've been here 16 years. So I've been 20-something years on top of that. There, I've been in the government. And I've never been told that I couldn't talk about something or couldn't do something, ever have I been told that. I've never been had employees that have been told, oh, I can't talk to you or anything like that. It's just, it's a myth that's out there. And I can only talk for the Federal Forest Service. I can't tell you what anybody else might be saying out there. But, you know, and I like to say this a lot, as I'm a tenured employee, there's nothing they could do to me anyway, even if they had told me that I couldn't talk it. But the government is terrible at keeping secrets. We can't do anything correct. I mean, you probably have witnessed that more than a few times. And so if anybody had some inside information, it would have been leaked by now. But we also don't allocate.
Could that also be part of the reason that the government doesn't actively pursue them? Because then,
well, I mean,
know,
they're
do
definitely
prove them to be real.
There definitely is money, and well, not as much, though. I mean, the real money in timber was many years ago, when Reagan and the first George Bush was in power, was president, because nowadays we get our timber a lot cheaper from a lot of different ways, unless it's related to wildfires. But we've had the spotted owl for a very long time, and we have found ways of, which is the most protected species in a forested environment. Oops, what's that?
Well, yeah, because when people argue this scenario, this case, they always bring up the owl that was not too long ago.
Yeah, I
discovered.
Can't hear you. There's some kind of weird noise going on in the background.
Sorry, that was my door. I was actually walking outside. What I was saying is, when people argue this scenario, this case, they always bring up the owl that was discovered not too long ago. And
well,
how,
that 20-something
that,
years ago now.
And how that
well,
affected...
Well, and he wasn't... Timber
Harvest. Sorry, go ahead.
Owl's been known as a species always. I mean, he's not a newly discovered species. What happened was the spotted owl was deemed about 20 years ago to be threatened and endangered from logging activities. We still do logging within that habitat, but what we have are rules on how that logging occurs. And so we have what we call LOPs, which means we don't operate in certain time periods or seasons so that they can mate. We leave a certain density of tree types and snags for species use. And so we have adapted very well to having that species being protected by law. Is it, no, do we still cut it
but
the
there
same?
Is a financial loss.
Yeah, there is a financial loss, definitely. There are places, old growth trees, that I'm sure loggers would love to get their little hands on, but they're not able to because they don't they're too big in diameter to be able to be taken. So yeah, there is loss, but I don't believe for one second that the logging companies have any kind of true pull. I mean, they're just not that big. Most of the mills have, most of the time they're owned by the same operator, but they can log just as much with very little rules on privately held lands. And that's where a lot of logging occurs, and that's where most of the destruction that I see is technically on privately owned lands that, you know, that they've had for lots of years, and that's right. What they're logging, and they're clear cutting those. And so U.S. Forest Service or you can't log on U.S. Park Service lands, and Bureau of Land Management, which is the other large federal landowner, they usually have the crap land that nobody wants anyway. So the U.S. Forest Service is the forested land that does most of the majority of logging in the federal government. And so I don't see them having, the timber industry having that much sway over us that would cause us, if we knew Bigfoot to be real, to not say so.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up. You know, if anyone would know, I assume it would be you in your position.
Yeah, I would know. I mean, I would honestly tell somebody if I knew for one second that all this time we knew this, I'd be blabbing all over the place. Blah, 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 I'd be Snowden, telling everybody everything I know, because it would be wrong, morally wrong, and I wouldn't stand for it. So you have that promise from me at any time. If I ever find out that we know more than what we've said, I'll be telling everybody about it.
I've noticed in the last week that you don't hesitate to tell what you need to tell.
No. In the end, I have to live with myself, and I have a new grandbaby, and those are the types way I want any child of mine to be believing. You know, if you have to be true to yourself and be true to the truth, and then whatever happens, happens, and so be it. I mean, it's just life is too short to worry about that stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's there was, you know, the whole Todd Standing Meldrum thing that kind of stirred up a little hornet's nest. You know, the way I look at it, you know, no matter what they do, it's not going to stop me from going out and doing what I do.
No, and
you
it
know,
shouldn't.
So
it shouldn't allow you.
Know.
Yeah, no. No, it's more of an issue of that this guy is making all the rest of us look bad, and we're never going to be taken seriously. That Bigfoot is real and should be taken seriously with this kind of stuff going on, because they'll point to, well, but that guy's a hoaxer, and the person who's the biggest name in Bigfooting hangs around with them, and you're like, I know, yeah, we know that, but it doesn't matter to us, Bigfoot's real, oh yeah, whatever. You know, and that's the harm that's being done, is because the rest of us who have been doing this a very long time and have equally put ourselves on the line. You know, Meldrum's not the only person on Earth who sacrificed something and has had to give up something or blah, blah, blah. There's a whole lot of us that have equally put in our blood, sweat, and tears. And I would like for that not to be blown out of the water for absolutely nothing. If there was a good reason, then I'd totally 100% be behind him, but there is no good reason for this.
Right. I had to mute my mic. I'm actually walking back into my house right now. You know, it's if we were to make a list of all the people, though, that are making it look bad for what we do, then, I mean, we'd be here forever.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of them. But most of us have recognized this. I mean, nobody's going to be having lunch with Rick Dyer any second. You know, most of us have the common sense to say, oh, you know, this is not good, and I think I'm just going to stick away. So, I mean, don't downplay his contributions.
Unfortunately, and I've talked about this before, the downside of, you know, all these television shows is, yeah, it does pique people's interest, but then they get online and they come across all this cloaking and interdimensional, and that's what they run with. you know, the Rick Dyers, and that's what they run with, and they gather their own flock, so to speak.
Yeah.
And
well, there's plenty of kooky people.
Yeah. You know, your armchair researchers. You know, they buy into all. You know, if it's on the internet, it must be true. You know, and I like to say we like to keep it real. You know, go out there into the field, experience it for yourself.
Well, that's why every time if I do something, I try to do exactly that, make sure I take the opportunity to say, no, Bigfoot can't cloak, stop believing that, that's not right, he's not talking to you in your head. You know, you just have to continue to educate, and you cannot, obviously you cannot save everybody, you cannot reach everybody, all you have to do is keep doing your best, and that's all you can do, and so it's easy to get frustrated with saying, you know, these people who say, oh, Bigfoot's going to kill you if you go out in the field. You know, those people, I might just say, yeah, you're right, so don't go out in the field. You know, just, they just don't.
I've been in the woods my whole life. I'm still kicking. You know.
Those people are afraid of their own
It's ridiculous. You know, I made a post in my group the other day, you know, when people come to me and they start talking about, you know, I saw this thing, and it was right there, and it scared me, and then it just disappeared, you know, and start leaning toward it cloaking, I just completely lose interest. Because I look at, like, how do you expect me to believe that you saw and encountered a real, live, earthbound being when you're not describing any known, real, live, earthbound being? You know what I'm saying? No creature on earth can do what you're describing.
Well, but I think
not you.
I know what you mean. But I guess what I'm saying is that you have to take, if they're in your group, you know, take the time to educate them. The stupidest things on earth are said out of people's mouths who just don't have a little bit of basic understanding, and there's some mercy that needs to be showed to them. That no, this is not. That's not what happened to you. This is what happened to you, or this is this, or this is this. And if they still, you know, oh no, I believe in cloaking, or I believe in this, then that's when you go, okay, I can't help you, and I'm going over here now. But you know, you can't. You have to. And I'm part of that because I do a lot of education in my job. I have to educate.
Right.
I mean, there. I have people who still can't believe Native people are still alive. They think we killed them all off during the Wild Wild West days, and you're like, wow, what did they teach you in school? And so you can't gauge that everybody on Earth comes from the same background or the same educational level that you have or the same experiences that you've had in the woods. And so you have to use that opportunity to try to educate. And
right.
If you can't get through to them, then maybe that's a different thing. But, you know, give it the opportunity, the old heave-ho, and see if you can't talk some reason into them, because, you know, it's just, you know, maybe with a little bit of coaxing or a little bit of understanding how real nature works, maybe they would come to understand that they just were wrong, you know, and it's okay to be wrong, but it's better to admit it.
Right. I'm thankful that so far, knock on wood, that in my group, and this is not, you know, bragging or anything, but I'm thankful that in my group, everyone seems to have common sense. You know, knock on wood so far. You know, we don't
rare.
Get all that craziness.
Yeah,
and
it's
I'm
rare,
really, really glad. Yeah, I'm really, really glad for that.
Well,
but,
that is
you know,
something to be thankful for.
You know, you and I talked last night, and we talked about the Native American aspect and Sasquatch. You know, and I said to you last night, and this will probably refresh your memory, but I've said it many times before. I mean, if you really want to understand, just look what white Europeans did to the Native Americans when we came to this country. You know, it's not too far-fetched to believe that there were some, and we might not even know all the stories, that there could have been some interaction between Sasquatch clans and European settlers.
Oh, of course. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And one of the things that always leads me to that belief is that some of those, not only the Native American stories, but the I deal a lot with mining and all that stuff because that's part of my job, and I'm in the Motherlode area of California, so I deal with that historic use on a regular basis, and so I get a lot of old newspapers and do a lot of work trying to figure out, you know, what a mine was or, you know, why is this thing here. And some of these Bigfoot stories occurred in places that I'm shocked by. You know, I'm going like, what in the world was a Bigfoot doing in XYZ area? That place, you know, there's no trees, there's no blah, blah, blah. And I've seriously come to the thought process that, or the belief system, that they used to be much more widespread, that they used to be able to go down further in elevation and not have to live in the forest or where they traditionally are seen today, because there wasn't as many people and there was little to be afraid of. And so now that when the Europeans showed up, then all of a sudden we've got an issue. And so they stopped using territory that they had used in the past. And so that doesn't surprise me at all. And I think there's, I mean, well, everybody thinks, oh, they had newspapers and all this stuff back then. This should have been in papers. Well, a lot of it is in papers if you would read them. But a lot of stuff never got recorded there either. I mean, nobody is a perfect historian where every single thing that happens in this world gets recorded down on paper.
It's not like we had the Internet back then. You know, yeah. Another example is buffalo. I mean, we know that there was buffalo everywhere back in the early settlement days. And now, I mean, you know, that's why I respect and envy Sasquatch so much, because they're not doing all this. You know, it's like we humans are cancer on this planet.
Well,
the way we just spread and destroy.
Well, we certainly feel entitled to do whatever we feel like doing. That's for certain. With little regard to past, you know, to future generations, and what if we do this today, this is the outcome tomorrow. And I've always said that. I mean, I'm not a, you know, I don't know what you would call somebody. Just because I'm from California doesn't mean I'm a hippie. But it just is the truth of reality. Is we do have renewable resources that can be renewed, but you have to have the time for that stuff to renew. And a tree takes time to grow, and the land takes time to heal. None of that happens overnight. And so those considerations have got to be taken into effect when you're thinking about, well, today I'm going to drive my ATV out in this beautiful, beautiful meadow and till all the soil up and destroy it because, who cares, it's going to still be there tomorrow. Well, you've just done so much damage to something that it may not recover in your children's lifetime, and I hope you feel great about that because you caused this, and I don't think that gets said enough. I think people whitewash everything. Oh, well, it was just good fun. It was just this. It was just that. Well, everything anybody does has a consequence, and so, you know, I'm a firm believer with education to teach people that information is that, you know, you know, leave only footprints, take only pictures, and then you'll be able to enjoy that forest. Your grandchildren and their great-grandchildren will be able to enjoy that resource for time, you know, in the future.
Well, you know, I think back then it was more of an individualistic mindset and awareness. You know, where one person will go out there, oh, I'm chopping down this tree. It's okay because it's just me. Without realizing that there might be 10 other people somewhere else that are doing the same thing. It's kind of like you know, having a swimming pool and one person gets in there and they pee in the pool. Yeah, that's kind of okay, I guess. But, you know, you don't know if everyone else is doing it too, and eventually you have just a ruined pool.
Yep.
Whereas now we have more of a group understanding.
Well, I see improvement greatly. I still see there's room for improvement where, you know, people need to realize rules apply to them and nobody's picking on you because you get a ticket for doing something you shouldn't have been doing. You know, it's tough love and don't do that again because we know that's bad for the environment and for you and your health as well, so stop doing it. And it's slowly getting better, but, you know, it comes down to education. It's It's what parents teach their children to respect and what those children choose to respect. And without respect, we've got nothing. And so I would hope that, you know, the generations we're raising or my grandson will have an inherent respect for those types of things and realize that it's all tenuous. And you could wake up tomorrow and have no national forests left because they all burned up in a fire because somebody didn't put their campfire out, or, you know, this happened or this happened, you know. And so, you know, it's just respect.
Right, right. I completely understand. And we're going to get now more into the encounters. And what I'd like to do is have you
well, I'm going to have to go.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 7 o'clock, and I haven't done my usual chores around the household yet, and so. But you're welcome to have me back on and someday, and I'll
definitely
tell you all of my stories.
And I appreciate you coming on. I mean, everything you said was just so in tune with everything that I have said and believed for so long, and I really do appreciate that.
Oh, awesome! Well, thank you for having me.
Hey, Kathy, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, guys, that was Kathy Strain. Right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to open the phone lines up for encounters for you guys to call in and share your encounters. If you want to do that, the number is 323-580-5703. That's 323-580-5703. Go ahead and call in, and I mean, I'd love to hear from you guys. You know, a lot of things Kathy said, those who listen to me regularly know that it's things that I've been saying for so long, and I'm so glad that she, being from the background that she is, having such close interactions with the Native American tribes, being part of the forestry service, I'm glad that she was able to kind of confirm everything that I've been saying, and I'm glad that you guys were actually able to hear it from that point of view. So anyway, you guys go ahead and call in, and you know, I'm going to go ahead and tell a report that I had had. This was probably about a week or so ago, maybe a little bit more. It was a local guy. The guy is—he's an elderly gentleman. He's in his 50s. I was hoping that he would call in tonight, but I wasn't able to get in touch with him today. But his story goes when he was younger, he had a dog, and the dog had died, and he went out and they buried the dog. They buried it, you know, in a hollow near his home. And he went on about his day, and then later that evening he went back to go hunting some birds. He had a pellet gun. He was going to go hunting some birds, something he did all the time. So he went out there, and he just got this weird feeling, and he looked and straddled over. Now this is his story, of course. Straddled over where he had buried his dog, there was a Sasquatch, and it was attempting to dig up the dog that he had buried earlier that morning. And that right there I found really interesting. So he went and he had his pellet gun. He was looking through the sights, and he said he could see the face really, really well. But he was shaking so bad that this is when he was like 11 years old. He was shaking so bad he couldn't hold his, you know, his pellet rifle steady. So he just went for the bigger target, which was the chest. And he said that he hit the thing in the chest. The thing made a kind of sound, and he got so scared that it was going to come at him that he just turned and ran. But, I mean, the description he described is just perfect to everything that we've previously heard regarding Sasquatch. I'm trying to actually find – I posted his report. I'm trying to actually find it right now because I'm kind of – I know I'm kind of paraphrasing, of course, But this was, here it is, right here. This was in South Mississippi, over around the Vicksburg area in the Warren County. And I've talked to them about that area, and now it's developed now, of course. There's still some wooded areas around there, and we're going to try. I talked to them, and hopefully we can get down there. Like I said, other than that initial report, I haven't got any calls back from him or anything like that. That's not saying that his report isn't factual. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that with his work, he works nights. There's more of a time issue between he and I. And you know, he's adamant that it wasn't a gorilla, it wasn't a bear. He said he could see the big crown of its head, the big shoulders, and it was just, you know, staring at him, almost frozen. And, you know, I'm going through the report now and trying to give you guys things that I might have left out. So he got home. He didn't tell anyone about it. And a few months later, his neighbor, well, 6 years later, I'm sorry, his neighbor lived down the road off in the woods, and, you know, probably about a quarter mile up in the woods from him. So I'm trying to read it now. I wrote it in his own words, and I'm trying to get to most of it. You guys just bear with me. He said he was 17 years old. His mom was the other kid. His mom was an alcoholic, and the boy called him, and he answered his phone, and his dad picked up the other line. And he says when he answered, the boy was screaming like a baby crying, and there was something in a garbage pit, because they had a garbage pit out back where they would, I guess, burn their garbage. The thing was in the garbage pit slinging the garbage out, just you know, going through the garbage. And the boy wanted the witness to get his dad to go out there with the gun and the gat. The dad didn't really want to go, you know, saying, oh, his mom's an alcoholic, and, you know, trying to play it off. And then that's when the witness finally told us that, hey, look, you know, I never told anybody, but years ago, this is what happened to me, and I saw it. And so his dad kind of took it seriously at that point in time, and they went to the other boy's house. And when they got there, of course, the thing was gone, but they described it that it had walked upright, and it just walked off. It just left, not on all fours, not crawled, just up and left. And so that was in the area. It all happened around 1975 or so. I thought it to be interesting. I talked to the guy for, you know, a couple of hours. I found him to be pretty credible. You know, then again, you never know. You know, you just never know. You weren't there. I wasn't there, so I can't say with 100% certainty this is what happened. I can only take what the guy said and, you know, his tone when he was describing it to me, and other little key factors during our conversation that led me to believe that he really, I'm not saying he really saw something, I'm saying he really believes that he saw what he saw. And I thought it was interesting because there was things that he included in the report that I found was real interesting, that if you were making something up, that you probably wouldn't throw certain things into it, you know, like the dog, digging up the buried dog, things of that nature. But then again, you know, you, like I said, you just never know, unless you were actually there with them and witnessed it yourself. But it's an interesting story. It's an interesting report. And you guys, you know, if you want to share something, call in. The number is 323-580-5703. If I don't, you know, if no one calls in within the next couple of minutes, I'll go ahead and shut the show down because, you know, I've had a busy day, getting a little late, getting kind of tired. But as I said, next week I will not be on the air because of Christmas. And the following week, I believe it's New Year's Eve, and you know, no, I can't expect anyone to be sitting around on a computer listening to a, you know, to a podcast. But there are things that are going to be happening. I'm going to try to change things up a little bit. There's a lot of things that are happening with me. I'm writing my story. That's going pretty good. I've got it all in my head. It's just a matter of getting it out, getting it onto paper, and making it all cohesive, come together. There's some things that there's a lot of news that happened recently. I can't really discuss it at this point in time. It's a long story. I just can't. But it's good news, and very soon, within the next couple of weeks, maybe a month, I'll bring it all forth, and you guys are going to love it. I'm so stoked about it. And I know that's kind of a teaser for you guys, but I legally can't go into any more details than that regarding it. There's a... Back to my story. There's a couple of friends of mine who are producers who are interested in it. Once I get it completed, I'm going to run it by them and see if we might be able to get that turned into a movie as well. I definitely don't. I'm not going to do, if you guys are looking for the whole Friday the 13th Sasquatch-style movie that everybody is putting out nowadays, it's not going to be that. It's going to be something a lot deeper, a lot more spiritual, and I don't mean spiritual as in religion. I just mean more internal, more personal, and I think you guys are going to really, really enjoy it. But we don't have anyone calling in right now, so I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and shut everything down, and I thank you guys for tuning in. I look forward to getting back with you guys in 3 weeks. That's when everything should be taken off again. And I don't know right now who my guests will be. I'm sure I'll come up with somebody between now and then. But thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. And you guys have a happy and safe holiday season, Christmas, New Year's Eve. Be safe out there. Don't drink and drive. And just take care of each other. Thank you again. Good night.